What's up, world? Welcome back to KameCast. My name is Cody, and as always, my incredible co-host, Doug Keeney. What's up, buddy?
Hey, Cody. How you doing, my man?
I am doing fantastic, brother. How are you?
Doing all right. It's crazy, because I woke up at the beginning of this week, and I went, man, feel like something's missing. Feel like we might have forgotten to do something last week.
I don't think we forgot, more so we just got lost in the sauce, man. We kept watching Dragon Ball Z, getting prepped for the show, and dude, we got lost, man.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even think it was so much lost. I think it was just we both had such crazy weeks last week that when we did finally sit down to get this stuff going, our bodies just kind of went, nah, you need to chill for a second, fam.
Yeah. Yeah, so we ended up watching most of the Namek arc, just trying to get prepped.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny because I kind of forgot how long this arc is when we were first starting to put this season together.
Yeah, especially if you're not watching Kai.
Yeah, which, I mean, I've watched a bit of Kai to kind of speed it up a bit, but when we watch together, we watch Z on Funimation, and it's a long show, guys.
Yeah, it's definitely long, but I purposely watched the full version just because you gotta have the filler, man.
I disagree so hard. I don't think you need the filler. I think that, you know, filler can make a story better if it's, like, done right, but 9 times out of 10, I would say that filler is just no bueno.
I hear you, man, but I love filler, man, for the love of the game.
Love of what game?
Dude, the game. Don't act like you don't talk street, bro. We're hood.
I know what you are saying.
We're not hood. Not even a bit.
No, we live in Huber, man. Huber Heights.
But yeah, man. I mean, I personally like filler. But shit. What do other people think? Everybody out there, are you for filler or are you against it?
I can't say that I'm against it. Okay, I just
so yes, that's not fair. I don't mean to say that you're against filler. I guess just in a sense, are you a take it or leave it on a filler? Is the general question.
For the most part, I'm take it or leave it. I'm usually leave it. You know, because I'm all about, you know, let's get things going. That's why I like a show like Naruto Shippuden, which I love, can frustrate me from time to time because there's just so much of it. There's a good bit of it in Dragon Ball Z as well, but nowhere near as much as like in a show like Shippuden, I would say.
I definitely agree. My first watch through of Naruto Shippuden and all that, I actually did skip the filler. And I know that's kind of harsh for me to say after just saying how I love filler, but that actually is the reason that I do love filler is because I had skipped it. And on my second watch through, I said, fuck it. I'm going to watch the filler now. And I'm so glad that I did because my first watch through, I missed a lot of awesome moments between characters that you don't get to see a lot.
Yeah. And okay. Yeah. I can see where that part would be pretty cool. You know, you'd kind of come at it from the perspective of, okay, this is extra content. I think it goes back to what we were saying in the last episode about it being like the movies kind of being like DLC, additional content to what's already established.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same thing with filler, just a little bit stretched out.
Absolutely. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but without filler, we would have never got Piccolo and Goku in Cars.
That's true. Yeah, we never would have gotten that. We never would have gotten, geez, what's some other classic filler moment? Well, Goku on Snake Way. There, most of that was filler.
Yeah. Hiffle was filler, too.
Hiffle was filler.
Princess Snake.
Gohan's excursions in the wilderness before Piccolo picked him up to start training. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all filler. I'll say a show like Dragon Ball Z, for the most part, does filler very well. There are a few bits that, you know, we will get into at some point. I'm just going to go ahead and say now, we're not covering filler right this second. We're pretty much taking all of the filler and just kind of covering it in one episode, just like the highlights, because I really didn't want to sit here and have to like go through the fake Namek arc if I can help it.
Yeah. We figured we'd save all the filler for a specific filler episode, and that's what we're going to do.
Yeah. Save all the filler for a filler episode of KameCast.
Yeah, exactly, man, because it's all about the filler.
I mean, it's going to be kind of impossible because our shows are all killer, no filler.
Damn, you got a good point, man. So here's a bullshit topic just for you. Not bullshit, but Netflix, I don't know if anybody watches Baki out there, but they did just release some new episodes of Baki, and I got to watch them. And let me say, holy shit, that was awesome. Great fight scenes.
So I've never really gotten all that much into Baki. It's not that I mean, not that I don't want to. I just have not really checked it out.
Yeah. So general synopsis is Baki is, I believe in the show, he starts at around 17 or so, maybe even 18. And he is training to become, in a sense, the world's strongest man. Or more so, just a little bit stronger than his father, who happens to be the world's strongest man. But he himself, Baki, is the Japanese underground champion. So he himself is incredibly strong. So the new series that they just released of episodes focuses on Baki going through a bunch of intense shit to challenge his father.
Okay, that actually sounds kind of cool. That sounds like something I could probably get into.
I thought it was incredibly well done. And then I'm excited. They finally released the new episodes of Seven Deadly Sins.
Did they? Oh, you know what? Yeah, some guy I work with was going on and on about that the other day. Yeah, Seven Deadly Sins. I've watched a bit of it. I'm really bad when it comes to like trying to take in a bunch of shows at once. I can really, my attention span is as such that I can only really take one in at a time. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, these are all shows I would love to check out. It's just a matter of actually committing to one and sticking with it.
Yeah. I finally got to a point where I'm not burning through animes in one day because, you know, I'm back to work.
Yeah.
But I was able to slowly watch through Baki, and I really enjoyed it. So I'm going to enjoy my time taking my time going through the new episodes of Sins.
Yeah. I will tell you one thing that I watched over the course of the last, like, week and a half that I'd never seen before. So Cody and I live in a house in Huber Heights, Ohio. It's like kind of like a suburb of Dayton. And we have three other guys that live with us. We're five guys in a house. And one of our roommates, Corey, had mentioned to me a few nights ago, hey, have you ever seen the Ip Man movies? And I was like, no, I hadn't. And he kind of explained to me what they were. And I was like, they sound really cool. So over the course of the last week and a half, we watched all four movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to say, damn, I can't believe these movies have been coming out since like 2008. I can't believe it took me so long to kind of get into them. Ip Man, for those of you guys that don't know, is probably most well known for being the guy that trained Bruce Lee in Wing Chun, which is a style of Kung Fu.
Mm-hmm.
And he was basically he's probably one of the most badass guys that had ever walked the face of the earth.
Okay. So Ip Man, although the movies are fictional, is that correct in saying?
Mostly, yeah.
Okay, so he was in fact a real person though in real life.
Yes. His real name was like Yip Man Sung or something like that.
Okay. Because I had seen the first movie sometime around when it came out, which I want to say was in between 2008 and 10.
Somewhere in there, yeah. I think 2008.
I want to say I've seen it then. I really don't remember a lot about it, but I did not know that he was a real man.
Oh, yeah, he was a real person. A lot of the stuff that happens in the movies didn't happen exactly that way. Like, not to spoil anything, but like the big fight at the end of the first movie is Ip Man fighting this Japanese general who's also a great martial artist and basically inspiring a revolution in China when Japan is occupying them during a war.
Okay.
And that never really happened. That wasn't something that happened at all. It was just put in there for dramatic effect. But, you know, that's Hollywood. This isn't Hollywood. This is China. China made these movies.
Okay.
But they're very good, very well put together. Donnie Yen, the guy that plays Ip Man, does really well. In the fourth one, they have this guy. I can't remember his name. Maybe I can throw it in post when I remember it. But the guy that plays Bruce Lee in the fourth one looks and sounds so damn close to Bruce Lee. It's crazy.
What year was that movie made?
The most recent one, it was either last year or this year.
I wonder if it was the same actor that played him in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood or whatever.
I know which one you're talking about. I've never seen that movie, so I'd have to go back and watch it. But
yeah, I've never seen it, but I've seen like clips of it, and it looked like a pretty, at least in my opinion, convincing Bruce Lee.
Oh, yeah. But the guy in Ip Man 4, there was one whole scene that was basically like Bruce Lee fanboy fan service. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where it's like Bruce Lee taking on a bunch of martial arts students and then their sensei in an alley.
In an alley.
And so it's just, and you know, it's basically laid out like an old Bruce Lee fight scene, like something that would have fit perfectly in like Enter the Dragon or something like that. And it was, but it was really good. And just I can't go on about them enough. The Ip Man movies, they're all on Netflix. And I know there were a couple spinoffs and prequels that kind of shot off that. But if you're a fan of old school kung fu movies and just traditional Chinese martial arts, they're great movies, and I can't recommend them enough.
Hell yeah. I definitely plan on checking them out, so I'll let you know what I think. And then if anybody out there has seen them, let us know what you think.
Absolutely, absolutely. Anything in particular you've been watching besides Baki?
Vikings.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Okay. Yeah, okay, let's talk Vikings for a second. I didn't realize how good that show was.
Oh, it's a great show. I haven't got to the later seasons yet. I've heard it kind of falls off, but I'm still going to continue because my opinion might differ.
Yeah, I mean, everything I've seen of it so far, I think I've gotten through like season 4, I think, mm-hmm. is about as far as I am right now. But it's just, oh my God, so good.
Yeah, the only thing I would say in my recommendation is if you like something that is bloody, cleverly savage, and just overall just easily sucks you into a world that doesn't really exist, Vikings, check it out.
It's crazy. For a world that doesn't exist, it feels so grounded mm-hmm. in reality.
Well, here's the thing is almost all the characters are actually based off of real-life people, and most of them are slightly exaggerated, if not exactly how it happened, instances in those people's lives. I'm not going to say anything that happens to anybody because you know how I am about spoilers. But yeah, that's all I can say is if you like that kind of stuff, check out Vikings.
You don't want to tell people about how Thor came down with his hammer and just killed everything?
I mean, thanks.
Then Tony Stark came down with the Infinity Gauntlet and saved everybody?
Don't even get me started, man.
Oh, man. But yeah, so that's kind of been our stuff as far as like what we've been watching. I did finally beat the Final Fantasy VII remake last week.
Hell yeah. I have not played that at all.
I will say if you're a fan of the original Final Fantasy VII, they take a lot of liberties with certain bits of the story. But as far as like a very well put together first act of what is going to be, I don't know. I don't know if it's going to be a trilogy or a series or what it is, but they set it up really well. The game's beautiful, plays amazingly. Mm-hmm. Everybody in the game is just so damn beautiful, and it concerns me.
Yeah, I've seen a few scenes and stuff from when you and Tyler were playing, and it looks incredibly well done. It's just not my cup of tea, man. But I'm not a big gamer as it is.
I feel that. Yeah, I mean, I like gaming, but I'm definitely nowhere near as big a gamer as, you know, other people that we live with. I mostly stick to, like, if there's franchises that are connected to things that I really like I'll play just about any Dragon Ball game, or really any anime game. Star Wars, which I did just restart Jedi Fallen Order earlier. That was really cool.
Yeah. Speaking of Dragon Ball Z Kakarot, I'll let Doug tell his story, but there's a very wise thing not to do when you're playing this game.
Yeah, so a while back, I don't know, probably a few months back, they released the first DLC story expansions for Dragon Ball Z Kakarot, the game that came out back in January, which is basically kind of like action-adventure, semi-open world take on the Dragon Ball Z story. Mm-hmm. Which honestly, that's what we should be doing to kind of get through the story of DBZ is just play through Kakarot. But
I feel like you miss moments. I played that game almost all the way through, and I really do love it. But my only gripe was I feel like whereas like Naruto Ninja Storm, you pretty much do get the entire story. Mm-hmm. With Kakarot, They definitely cut some bits out.
It's very broad stroke. Yes. Very, very broad stroke. Yes. Which, I mean, it's one of those things where with the Naruto Ultimate Ninja Storms games, which, by the way, these are made by the same company. CC2, yeah, the developer on the Ultimate Ninja Storm games, made Kakarot. And I was so excited for that because that had always been a dream of mine. Ever since I'd gotten into the Ultimate Ninja Storm games, I was like, man, I wish CC2 could get their hands on a Dragon Ball game.
Yeah.
Because they always make the Storm games so beautiful and so well done. And yes, you do get so much of the story of the anime. I mean, you really could. If you don't want to have someone sit there and watch all 500 episodes of Naruto Shippuden, you can have them play Ultimate Ninja Storm 2 through 4 and get pretty much everything you need.
Yeah.
You can't. I would not do the same thing for Kakarot, though. I would not recommend to anybody, okay, play Kakarot and that'll give you everything you need about DBZ. I think if I was going to recommend anything to anybody, I'd recommend Kai for someone that's getting into it for the first time. Because, I mean, as much as I love the original cut, especially the uncut dub that came out with the orange boxes, I just think Kai is the definitive dub of that show because everyone's voices had really dialed in by that point. They had finally gotten some real uncut dialogue to throw into mainstream media. And I just think everything came together perfectly on Kai, and it's literally everything that you need.
I would definitely agree.
But so, to tell my Kakarot story real quick, yeah, so the DLC expansion was dropped where it basically introduces Beerus and Whis, who are a couple characters from Dragon Ball Super. And they have you do these training exercises with Goku and Vegeta, with Whis and with Beerus, and you can, like, mass level up Goku and Vegeta.
Yeah.
Like far past where they should be, wherever you're at in the story. You can access this at any time in the story mode.
Yeah.
And do it. And, like, so you can get Goku, for example, all the way up to Super Saiyan God before he even gets to Namek, which I did. I have Goku leveled up to, like, level 125 right now. And the lesson there, people, is don't do that because it's going to make the game very boring. Because in a game called DBZ Kakarot, you can expect to be playing Kakarot/Goku. A lot.
Yeah.
And so it's literal One Punch Man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it literally breaks the game and turns it into One Punch Man.
Yeah. Kind of the same thing with Vegeta, too. I don't have him as leveled up as I do Goku, but still, I mean, it's crazy. Oh, man. So I would say don't do that.
Yeah. So talking about power levels, let's transition into the Namek Saga where we get our first instance of the most popular and famous transformation, although we are not getting that to that today.
Are we talking about Frieza's third transformation?
No, the 15th.
Oh God. Yeah, so we're gonna do a deep dive into the first part of the Namek arc. Now I think we kind of have the way we have this broken up is we're basically gonna do it in fourths. Because, like I said earlier, Namek is a large chunk of real estate in Dragon Ball Z, like well over 100 episodes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot to talk about.
Yeah, and I mean, so for the first bit, we're going to cover pretty much everything from the time they arrive all the way to the point that a certain group gets announced.
Mm.
Then the next part will focus on that group. The third part will probably focus on a lot of the Frieza stuff. And then the fourth part will be where we finally talk that particular transformation that Cody's talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Which I'm sure all of you out there that listen know what it is, but play the game with us, won't you?
Yes.
So let's get into it, man. The Namek arc. So it picks up. We're going right past the fake Namek arc. We'll cover that in the filler episode later. But so we get to Namek, Krillin, Bulma, and I almost said Krillin, Bulma, and Vegeta. Krillin, Bulma, and Gohan finally make their way to Namek. And pretty much right away, they're greeted with some pretty bad news. As soon as they land, they see a sand pod land. And they're like, wait a minute. That's familiar. That's Vegeta! Oh, no! And then, oh, yeah, there's also this whole other group of people out there that are, like, way stronger.
Oh, yeah.
And then, wait a minute, here's two guys coming around the corner. They just blew up our ship.
Yeah, they fucking not even there for an hour and their ship's blown up.
Yeah, another crazy moment in there is when they first get to Namek and they realize Vegeta's there, Bulma is just ready to bail. Like, immediately.
Yeah, she's immediately like, fuck Yamcha, fuck Tien, fuck Chiaotzu, fuck Piccolo.
Oh, and
we're done.
No. It's not. No, she wasn't like saying, oh, no, fuck those people. She was saying, fuck Krillin and Gohan. She was saying, hey, you know what? Why don't you guys stay here and collect the Dragon Balls, and I'll make the 2-month trip back to Earth to get Goku, and then make another 2-month trip back. So 4 months from now, I can come get you.
Like, bitch, we'll be dead by then.
Yeah. It's like, you know, given how crazy things wind up getting on this planet by the end of this arc, it's like, it's just so funny to see. Yeah, not even 5 minutes in, Bulma is just ready to, bye.
Hey, killer survival instincts, just saying.
Yeah, I mean, that stuff like that is the reason I like Bulma, because she's just authentic.
Oh, yeah, she's not afraid to be... like how she feels. She doesn't hide anything.
Yeah, and that's just, you gotta admire it. Even in situations like that, it's like, hey, you know what? She's looking out for number one. I can see why she winds up with a certain character later.
Yeah.
But also, talk about just like a quadruple kick to the dick for our heroes starting out. You know, I mean, it's like, okay, so the guy that we just beat a few months back, that we just barely beat, is here. And he's stronger.
Yeah.
Oh, and now there's this bunch of other people. Like, we don't know who they are, but we are sensing them, and they are strong. Yeah. So about this time, Bulma turns on the dragon radar, and they can see that it works. Like, okay, we're detecting some Dragon Balls. Wait a minute. There's 4 of them together, and they're moving towards us, like, really fast.
Yeah.
And so they hide in the cave, and this is the moment where they realize just how strong the other people that are on this planet are.
Oh, yeah, because about the time they get into the cave and they peek out, Frieza blows by at like Mach 50 billion.
Yeah.
And he, in the power that is coming off of him, is so strong that it is like physically making Krillin and Gohan just, I don't even know what the right, vulnerable?
I can't really think of a better way to say it. Yeah, just vulnerable. They were just, yeah, they had never felt a power like this before. The way that they put it, I don't remember which dub says this, but it's basically like, man, that was like the strength of 100 Vegetas or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. Not to mention, there's all these Vegeta-level fighters that are with him.
Hmm.
So they go, and Krillin and Gohan go and investigate, and they come up on Frieza and his henchmen on this Namekian village. And this is where we get properly introduced to Frieza for the first time. And I gotta say, man, shout out to both Linda Young and Chris Ayres. Mm. Because we like we said, we watched the original cut. Then I also went back and watched a little bit of Kai as well.
Mm.
Man, it is so cool that we were able to get 2 such distinct versions of Frieza from these 2 people. And I love them both so much. Linda Young's performance has always stuck with me as like one of the creepiest portrayals of a character in all of anime. Mm. And I mean that in the absolute best way. But like, you know, she kind of focuses on more the the alien side of Frieza.
My opinion, the difference of the 2 voices is... Linda Young's version, to me, is a little more sinister and threatening, where it actually carries a weight of, like, badassness. Where, I mean, yes, we already know Frieza is a badass when Chris Ayres is voicing him, but Chris Ayres' version has a high and mighty kind of prince-like royalty feeling.
Yeah,
to
exactly.
It.
Linda Young is more the tyrant, the alien overlord tyrant, whereas Chris Ayres is much more the emperor.
Exactly.
You know, yeah. Which is what Frieza is.
Mm-hmm.
And I love both performances, but I mean, Linda Young's the OG, so I mean, I got to give it to her if I have to pick one or the other, but it's great that we got both of those amazing interpretations of that character. So Frieza and his henchmen, we got Zarbon and Dodoria, who wind up being pretty... I always liked Zarbon and Midoriya. I always thought it was a shame that more didn't get done with them later. Mm-hmm. But they're all, but they definitely established themselves really well in this scene in the Namekian village. They're there, obviously, looking for the Dragon Balls. And the Namekian elder, he's basically like, yeah, I'm not gonna do that.
Yeah.
Then after a few of his people wind up getting killed, one of them being his son, he's finally like, okay, I'll give you the Dragon Ball.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, this is also the village that Dende is first introduced in, isn't it?
Yes, his father is the one that gives him the Dragon Ball.
Okay.
And he has a brother, but the brother winds up getting killed.
Yeah.
And I mean, and not for nothing, I mean, they did bring in, you remember when the Namekian fighters got brought in?
Yeah, because there's two different tribes.
Yeah, and I mean... I remember when they, like, when I was watching this the first time as a kid, like, it's crazy the stuff you remember, but I do remember this going like, oh yeah, this is awesome. It felt like very Power Rangers-y to me, where it was like, awesome, here they come. Mm-hmm. Here comes the cavalry, and then nothing. Yeah. Just
and then
leveled.
Smack.
But they do manage to do one really good thing, which is destroy the scouters,
mm-hmm.
making it where none of Frieza and his men are going to be able to find the Namekian villages as easily because they can't look up their power levels.
Exactly, yeah.
But, so, unfortunately, the Namekian warriors wind up getting bested by, I think, Dodoria? I think Dodoria is the one that does... It's either Zarbon or Dodoria. I don't remember which. But, Yeah, so they wind up getting defeated, and the village elder finally agrees to give up the Dragon Ball. And he gives up the Dragon Ball, and Frieza basically goes, oh, hey, BT Dubs, I'm evil as shit, and kills him anyway. And they're about to kill Dende when Gohan, who's seething at the sight of all this, finally just can't take anymore, goes down, bitch kicks Dodoria, and takes this young Namekian, who we later find out is named Dende, and they fly away. What do you think of this scene, the introduction to Frieza, and just kind of like this first kind of flex of his might without him ever even really doing anything?
I think it kind of mirrors Vegeta landing on Earth. Very much shows that this person is in control, and they are willing to do whatever it takes, no matter how malicious, to get what they want.
Absolutely. You know, I just think it's a great way to introduce what arguably is probably the most iconic villain in all of anime.
Mm-hmm.
So from there, we catch up with Vegeta, who is meeting up with this guy called Kui. You remember the this is always, I always really enjoyed this flex for Vegeta, because Kui, for those of you that don't know, he's a pretty minor character, but he's kind of set up to be like, oh, this is like Vegeta's rival in the ranks of the Frieza Force, and it's kind of fun to see Vegeta just spank this guy. You remember this? Yeah. What's your memories of this fight?
I thought it was awesome because, again, like I said before, I really liked Vegeta at this time. So to see him get shit talked by someone who is basically the same as him, you can't see the quotes I'm doing with my hand. knowing that he has grown stronger and he just mollywops the fuck out of him,
mm-hmm.
very cathartic.
Oh, very much so. Very much so. I will say at this point, I still wasn't entirely sold on Vegeta as like, oh, a character that I love. He was kind of to the like character I love to hate kind of portion of his career at this point for me. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Because, I mean, he was still a bad guy, and I still wasn't entirely sold on him on that level. But he was still a cool character with some really cool moves. Excuse me. With some really cool moves, and I just thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. But yeah, for me, I don't know. I just always like a bad guy. So it was very easy to root for him.
Suffice to say that you cheer for the heels.
Yeah, man. Always.
Oh, man. So Frieza sends Dodoria after Gohan and Krillin, who have just taken Dende and just flown off.
Kidnapped.
Yeah, basically, yeah. I mean, can you kidnap someone whose dad just got killed?
Yeah.
Is that how that works?
I mean...
Because, I mean, if no one's alive to miss him, is it really kidnapping?
Yeah. Still a human.
No, he's not.
Okay. My bad. I got literal there for a sense. It is still a life form.
So Dodoria is chasing after Krillin and Gohan and Dende, and Krillin busts out the solar flare, and they're able to get ahead of him and lose him.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's right about this time that Vegeta finds Dodoria. This is such a fun, like, bit of the anime for Vegeta, because he's just getting to systematically take down people that have been apparently treating him like crap off camera this whole time.
Doggy want a biscuit.
You know, beats the hell out of, destroys Kui. But he gets this really cool fight with Dodoria where Dodoria tells him right before Vegeta kills him, hey, Frieza blew up your planet, to which Vegeta's like, okay, and kills Dodoria anyway.
Yeah, because Dodoria begs for his life. He's like, he tells him, and he's like, Frieza did this, and if we team up, you're strong enough, we could take out Frieza together, basically trying to save his life.
Which Kui did the same thing.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious. So then he finally hits a brick wall when he comes up against Zarbon. I kind of like the Vegeta Zarbon stuff because it's kind of done in two parts. You get this first fight where Vegeta, who has been so cocky, he introduced us to the concept of Zenkai Boost, which a Zenkai Boost is this ability that's exclusive only to Saiyans, where after every time they like come back from a battle that they've almost died from, they come back stronger. And so that's a fun little hack that kind of gets exploited throughout this arc a lot.
The other thing it does, and I didn't think this growing up just because I don't think I had the mental capacity to think like this. However, if I had watched this a little bit more mature, I probably would have thought this, was Zarbon being able to defeat Vegeta also could implant the thought in your mind, oh, shit, Vegeta, yes, did get stronger, but he wasn't able to defeat that guy. So is Goku going to be strong enough to be able to defeat those people?
Yeah, which I do want to go ahead and talk about one tiny little filler bit here. That it's not really filler because it is covered in the anime, but there are some pretty cool flashbacks. Not flashbacks, but like they do cutaways to Goku healing on Earth.
Yeah, just sitting in the hospital bed.
He's like using his mental strength to like make water float. He's trying to do push-ups, and Chi-Chi's not having it.
Yeah.
Finally, after like two or three episodes of that, Yajirobe shows up with a Senzu bean.
Bean Daddy.
Yeah, which gets Goku healed up perfectly, and he literally jumps out the hospital window onto the flying Nimbus and gets right to the Briefs residence where they have a ship waiting to take him to Namek that'll have him there in 6 days. Convenient plot ship is convenient. talk about how lucky Bulma, Krillin, and Gohan have to be at this point. Because, like, literally, if it wasn't for Dr. Briefs being able to make the ship better,
yeah,
they would not have survived this arc.
Yeah.
The only way they survived this is the fact that it only took Goku 6 days to get there.
Yeah. Now, we debated this, and I can't remember, and we should have looked it up for sure. Was the new ship built from Goku's pod from when he landed as a baby, or was it built from the scraps left from Raditz, Nappa?
It is built from Goku's pod.
Okay.
Yeah, the pod that was used for the ship that Krillin, Gohan, and Bulma used, I believe... Oh, man, how did they do that one? Because they...
I thought they had Kami's ship from when they
came. Oh, yeah, that's right. They used Kami's ship from Namek, that's right.
Yeah.
And then, but then when it came time for them to make Goku's ship, they couldn't make another of that ship, so they were able to find Goku's pod from when he was a baby, which is crazy. You would have thought that thing would have been, like, hella destroyed by this point.
Yeah, I mean, I would be interested to know if it was literally just sitting in the forest all this time. Or if Grandpa Gohan had, like, hauled it and stored it somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know. Because, I mean, we only see it that one time in the flashback at the beginning of the Saiyan arc. And it still looks in pristine condition. And then you never see it again. So we never really know what happened to it beyond the fact that it got salvaged and used for this.
Yeah, because we know that it wasn't destroyed because he landed safely. It wasn't that he crashed and...
No, he was meant to come to Earth. Yeah. So the ship was fine. But yeah, this is one of the first times in the show where it's like, okay, yeah, super plot convenient thing happens.
Also, something funny that I didn't for the life of me, I didn't remember that this was actually in the anime. Because it made me laugh so much that I was like, there's no way that that's not like a Team Four Star thing. But Dr. Briefs goes on and on about how the spaceship is not ready to go because it doesn't have a cappuccino machine.
Yeah, I know. Literally, I thought that same thing. Like, oh, that's got to be an abridgism. And then we're watching the original cut. It's like, no, that's what it is. I'm like, oh, God. Like, wow. Sometimes it is great when they just play it straight.
Oh, yeah, dude. And they're literally, he's like, you're going to regret not having that cappuccino machine.
Yeah. Do you think he ever does?
No, not one bit.
Well, seeing as that, I don't think that ship survives Namek, so I don't think...
No, well...
No, because...
Yeah, no, it doesn't, because they escape on... Yeah.
Yeah, he finds another way home.
Yeah.
But anyway, so... Zarbon and Vegeta have a fight, and Zarbon reveals that he has a transformation, which takes him from being kind of like this... stereotypical early 90s like pretty boy anime character with long hair to like this big like kind of shark looking thing.
Yeah.
And he just mollywops the hell out of Vegeta and leaves him for dead.
Oh yeah.
And even before the next scene that comes up with Frieza.
Well, let's preface this. Zarbon didn't do his job properly.
No, he didn't.
No. Cuz what's rule number 32 or whatever it is? Double tap.
Yeah, always double tap.
Yeah.
But leaves him for dead, and then he goes back to Frieza to report to him that, hey, I'm pretty sure I killed Vegeta. To which Frieza's like, okay, so there's a Dragon Ball missing. What if Vegeta's the one that knew where that was? You better go find him and pray he's still alive.
Right.
So Zarbon goes and finds Vegeta. He's still alive. Oh, well,
don't forget, that is after... He kills Apool's lookalike.
Yeah, you talk about the yellow Apool?
Yeah, yeah, because dude went to the village that Vegeta took the Dragon Ball from and hid in the water, and he killed all the Namekians. And Frieza's like, you're a fucking idiot.
Yeah, there was like two or three Namekians that were still alive, and this guy killed him.
Yeah.
To which Frieza's like, just destroys him. And here's the thing. This is our first kind of taste of Frieza doing anything. And he literally one-shots a guy with his finger.
Oh, yeah. And it also further shows who he is. Not only will he kill civilians and innocent people, but he will even kill his own men if he sees fit.
Absolutely. So this inspires Zarbon to, you know, try to save his own ass and go find Vegeta, which he does. And then he brings him back, and they put him in a healing pod. And eventually,
convenient.
Yeah, very convenient. And then eventually Vegeta's healed and he busts out of there and basically creates a diversion so he can take the, I think it's 5 Dragon Balls that Frieza has at this point.
Yeah, he has 5 because Krillin has 1 and Gohan went after the one that Vegeta threw in the water because they still have the Dragon Radar.
Yeah. So Vegeta tosses all 5 Dragon Balls out of Frieza's spaceship window. Conveniently, they all land in about the same spot, which is really good. And
now, was it him that blasted the hole in the glass, or was that Frieza?
No, that was him. That was Vegeta. Okay. What he did was he went into the hallway, and he blasted like an explosion several rooms away from where he was, and then he blew out the windshield.
Okay.
Is that is it a windshield on a spaceship? Because I feel like there's no wind in space.
That's the easiest thing to call it without getting into a debate about it.
I'm all into semantics. That's why.
Yeah, windshield, perfectly fine in calling it that.
Yeah. So then Vegeta is about to go back to the village that he has the Dragon Ball stored at, and bumps into Gohan, and he's like, you know, hey, that's a funny looking watch you have there. You know, talking about the Dragon Radar. Yeah, I don't think
it's a watch.
And nothing else. I don't know if any of that is an exact quote, but he basically dismisses Gohan. He's like, okay, well, I'm about to be an immortal, so I'll see you later. Oh, by the way, knees him in the stomach like, that's for your dad. Bye-bye. And then leaves him.
Okay, so they rescue Dende, and they take them back to home base where Bulma is. And they're basically saying, hey, we need to find this Dragon Ball. And Krillin... they basically talk Dende into taking them to where the final Dragon Ball is, where it's with Master Guru. And Krillin and Dende set off to go do this.
Yeah. And that's at the and that's where Gohan goes and finds the Dragon Ball that Vegeta had hidden in the Namekian village.
Because he keeps the Dragon Radar and they pop it off, and Gohan and Bulma see that there is a singular Dragon Ball somewhere in another town. So he's like, it seems pretty close enough. I'll go check it out. That is where we sensed Vegeta's power earlier, mm-hmm. but he's not there anymore. So safe to say ours.
Yeah. So yeah, while he's doing that, Krillin goes and visits a Grand Elder Guru and,
Meets Nail,
who is...
Cannot forget about Nail.
Yeah, who is basically a Piccolo lookalike, which, I mean, it's kind of shitty to say that about a Namekian. But, I mean, he is. He's basically a stand-in for Piccolo in this moment. But he's a great character, and I enjoy the little bit that we do get to spend with him in this show. So Guru hands over the Dragon Ball, but then he's like, hey, you have a deep reservoir of hidden power in you. Why don't you let me unlock that? And so he does, and Krillin gets this huge power boost that, unfortunately, I think is the only one that he ever gets in the series.
No, because I think he does get stronger around the time of the androids.
Well, yeah, I mean, he gets stronger, but that's done through training, not so much someone unlocking.
So you're,
yeah.
Okay, you're talking about like
significant power-ups. Gotcha. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then he's like, hey, you know what? I bet Gohan has a lot of hidden potential in him, because they've been kind of teasing that all the way up to now. So he's like, hey, if I bring my friend here, would you be able to do the same thing to him? And Guru's like, yeah, no problem. So Krillin speeds off with the Dragon Ball and decides he's going to go find Gohan. And so I believe... Yeah, okay, so now we're caught back up. Zarbon is going after Vegeta and finds him and basically chases him down around the same time that Vegeta sees Krillin flying with a Dragon Ball. Mm. So Vegeta goes after Krillin and Zarbon goes after Vegeta. So they wind up meeting up at the cave where Bulma, Krillin, and Gohan are staying. And this is where we get Zarbon and Vegeta round two. Vegeta, having just had another Zenkai boost, completely wipes the floor with him and then gets the Dragon Ball. And we get another instance of one of Frieza's lackeys trying to join forces with Vegeta to fight Frieza.
Yeah.
And then it winds up not happening because Vegeta's like, no, I'm way too strong for that now, and destroys him. So then Vegeta takes the Dragon Ball from Krillin and Bulma, and he's all excited because in his mind he thinks he has all seven Dragon Balls. So he runs away, and Krillin's like, oh no, you know, we're fucked now. Vegeta's got all seven Dragon Balls. When Gohan shows up, he's like, hey guys, I got a Dragon Ball. And they're like, oh, thank God. Because now all they have to do, and it's a good plan, is they just have to hide the one.
Yeah.
They don't need to have all seven. They just need to hide the one until Goku gets there, and then they can work this shit out.
Oh, yeah. But hey, let's talk about this real quick. This says something about Vegeta and himself. Is he has now had at least two opportunities now where he, A, could have killed Gohan, and B, could have killed Krillin and Bulma.
And doesn't.
But, yeah, he chose not to, which says that he himself is actually changing, because he has a legitimate reason to kill Krillin. Krillin almost killed him. If it wasn't for Goku, Krillin would have killed him.
Oh, yeah.
So he could have held a grudge against Krillin.
Yeah, he could have gotten his revenge there, and I don't think anyone would bat an eyelash necessarily at it. And, I mean, Gohan, he could have, you know, you could justify him wanting to kill him because he's the son of Goku and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But, yeah, that's a very good point. I never thought about that. Yeah, this is kind of where, yeah, this is where we kind of start seeing seeds being planted for a potential babyface turn for Vegeta.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, it's kind of cool to see it start here. So they leave Bulma, Krillin and Gohan, rather, leave Bulma with the last Dragon Ball. And Krillin's like, okay, I'm going to take you, Gohan, to Grand Elder Guru's so he can unlock your hidden potential.
Yeah.
And so they go off. Bulma stays behind with the Dragon Ball. So while this is going on, Vegeta goes back to the village that he had destroyed, goes underwater looking for his Dragon Ball, and he realizes it's gone. And then it clicks in his head that he ran into Gohan, and he remembers the device that he had in his hand, and he goes, oh, that must have been some kind of Dragon Ball radar or something. Mm-hmm. And you hear this ginormous yell, and Vegeta, probably the most pissed off he's ever been in the history of the show, just darting at Krillin and Gohan's power level.
I love that. Isn't that a moment in TFS where he screams throughout decades?
Yeah, he like screams so loud that they can hear him on Earth. Goku can hear him on his spaceship. And
Future Trunks is like, Dad?
Yeah, Future Trunks can hear him 20 years later.
Yeah, I love that shit.
Yeah. So then he eventually is about to catch up to him, but Krillin sends Gohan ahead. It's like, okay, look, Gohan, you're our best chance right now. You need to get to Guru. I'll hold him off.
Yeah.
And so Gohan goes off and meets up with Guru, and Krillin kind of distracts Vegeta for a second, and then they both wind up going back to Guru's place, and Vegeta senses this super strong power level. Like, whoa, you know, what's going on in there? And out walks Gohan, who says, you know, I'm now as strong as you were when we fought on Earth, which, you know, Vegeta's pretty dismissive of that, but still, that's pretty significant.
Yeah, for Gohan, that's huge. We also forgot to mention that while Frieza was scolding Zarbon, he told him to send word for his five fighters. He didn't name them, I believe, right?
No, he named them, they needed new scouters.
Mm-hmm.
And so they said, okay, so have the Ginyus bring the new set of scouters. And at this point, we don't really know what the Ginyus are.
Yeah.
You know, so Vegeta is, you know, not impressed by Gohan's power-up, but he senses something in the building. And so he destroys the wall and comes upon Guru.
Mm-hmm.
And he's about to do something, and Nail's about to jump in and just, like, shove his boot down his throat because, you know, Nail's whole reason for existing is protecting Guru.
Yep.
But Guru stops him and says, hey, just so you guys know, there's five really strong power levels coming to this planet right now.
Yep. Which is also happening at the same time that Goku is headed to the planet, because he has now left Earth, and it takes about 6 days for Goku to get to the planet, I believe it takes three? Is it four or three?
I don't know how many days it takes the Ginyus to get there. I don't think they say.
I know it's supposed to be a good bit before Goku's supposed to be there.
Yeah.
But all that time while they're flying there, Goku is also flying there. However, Goku is not just sitting in a pod flying there. He is in a gravity simulated room training. I believe at this point he's about 50 times gravity.
By the time he gets there, he's been training at 100 times gravity.
Yeah, I know by the time he gets there, but I believe at this point when...
Well, I mean, I don't know specifically what gravity he's on at this exact moment, but ultimately he's working to getting to 100 times gravity.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a good point. While all this is going on, Vegeta, you know, Goku's not being a slouch. Goku is pushing himself to be a thousand times stronger than he probably was by the time Vegeta got to Earth. And so Guru drops this bomb on everybody. Says, hey, there's these five super high power levels that are about to be here.
Yeah.
And Vegeta breaks out in a cold sweat because he just knows. He knows right away what it is. And he says, okay, listen. These guys are really powerful. They're Frieza's most elite fighters. They're called the Ginyu Force. And it pains me to say this, but I need your help.
Hmm.
And that's where we're going to cut it off for now. So
now, how do you feel about that? How did you feel when you first saw that, where Vegeta legitimately asks for help?
As a kid, I remember going, whoa, because I didn't trust Vegeta. And I was like, you know, what's his play here? But then to see the legitimate fear in his eyes when he realizes who's coming, it makes the request for help carry that much more weight. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I mean, in a sense, that's really the first time he puts his Saiyan pride aside.
Oh, yeah. And you know, and basically what his plan equates to is, okay, get the rest of the Dragon Balls and we'll make me immortal so I can't die and they can't beat me.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's the extent of his plan, and he essentially wants Krillin and Gohan to be meat shields, but still, the fact that Vegeta is teaming up, or open to the idea of teaming up with people that just an arc earlier he was trying to murder,
yeah,
just speaks like to how, it doesn't really speak to, I don't think it speaks to any real character growth for Vegeta, because it's a desperation play, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, it's not a thing where Vegeta's like, you know, Vegeta could handle this on his own even if he wanted to.
Oh, yeah.
So, but for him to reach out to his enemies, yeah. That just, it again, just makes it carry that much more weight.
Oh, yeah. I 100% agree. So that's where we're going to leave it at for today with our Namek arc discussion. Next week, we'll be coming back and we'll be talking about the Ginyu Force and everything that there is to go along with that. Because believe me, there are so many epic moments that entail with this.
I got a sneaking suspicion that the Ginyu episode is probably going to be the longest episode that we've recorded so far. Because there is a lot that happens during the Ginyu portion.
Oh, yeah. There's so much. There's so many badass moments and so many cool one-liners.
Well, that pretty much does it for anything we have to say about DBZ and the Namek arc tonight, guys. You got anything else you want to add, Cody?
No, man. I'm pretty much dialed up, man.
All right. Well, hey, guys, we want to thank you so much for taking the time to tune in to KameCast Season 1, Episode 4. You can find us on Twitter at KameCast Media. You can follow me on Twitter at Burnout Doug.
You can follow me at Twitter at Kame_Code.
Yeah, and we are available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Simplecast, iHeartRadio, every avenue that you have that you can find podcasts, we're on it. Leave us reviews, leave us ratings, let us know how we can make this show better for you. We are super active on the Twitter community, and we are trying really hard to talk to as many different people that we can in the world of anime, so feel free to reach out to us, say hi, or just throw questions at us. Anything you want, we will be there. Thank you guys so much. I've been Doug Keeney.
I've been Cody Taylor. Stay well, stay healthy, and stay safe.
And as always, support the official release.
Absolutely.
This is KameCast.